This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, we're back, and I know we took a week off there to kind of settle everything down as we got into the All-Star Weekend, but this is Andrew Reich for PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. I am joined, finally, with my co-host Adam Murray.
I thought we could take a break. I thought it was nice All-Star break. Everyone could sit back, take it easy, but no. Now it's all chaos.
Yeah, it's just the moment we left, you know, all the kids had to just go ahead and skirmish around and, you know, throw crap on the wall, and now we're just sitting here trying to clean it all up. But thank you for joining us. I know we took a little bit of a break. Adam and I had to go on our own All-Star Weekend, in which we won a bunch of trophies that don't mean anything and did a lot of meaningless things in between, just like all the NBA players did in the All-Star Weekend, even though it was kind of enjoyable. You know, the All-Star game was in Madison Square Garden. They had the weekend game or the weekend festivities in Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So a lot of fun stuff, but you know, the fun was over pretty fast, because even though it was an extended, you know what, I'm gonna start with that. What did you think of the new type of extended All-Star break that Adam Silver has started this year, in which they played on Thursday before the All-Star game weekend started, but they didn't play their next games again until the next Thursday night, and there was only two games on the docket. Did you like it? Did it feel different?
I didn't really think much of it because it was announced. It didn't really come as a shock, but it's just, where do they move these games to? Are there more, you know, back-to-back-to-backs now? Or,
well, they'll never do three in a row like they did for the lockout shortened season, because they were just in a bind to try to fit the games in for 66 games in a three-month or four-month span. But back-to-backs are more likely in this scenario, maybe piling up more early wins. No weeks off in the months of December and February like some teams would get.
I just don't know if it's worth it if you have to make it up in the back end.
Mm-hmm.
That's it was done and over with. It had its highs, it had its lows, but back to business now.
Yeah, and the GMs got back to business pretty quickly. Now, obviously, all these GMs are doing their jobs anyway, regardless of any games are played. You know, the roster is doing whatever they're doing, whatever. But they're going to go ahead and get on the phone. They're going to make deals. But I don't think we were anticipating what happened with the trade deadline that just passed this past Thursday regarding some of these deals. Trade deadline happens every year, and there's always transactions that go on before a week before the trade deadline. Some of them, like the Rajon Rondo deal, they get put together well before, like in the month of December. But it seemed like things were kind of going quietly, like it usually does in trade talks or when it comes to making deals for the trade deadline. And then right about 2 hours to an hour before the deadline in the early afternoon Thursday, what happened?
Well, first off, what happened to the days where it's just like nothing happened and you're just waiting for like Malik Rose to get traded and that's about it? And it's just all of a sudden last hour, like I wake up at 2. Oh, nothing happened. Nobody really did anything. Okay, go back to bed, back to normal. Oh, no, wait, no. Everybody decided, wait, one person made a trade, so we got to get rid of our talent, and let's panic, and let's give up. And, you know, Philly's just like, how do we get more draft picks? Can we have the entire draft to ourselves?
That is completely insane. That's just one of the byproducts of what happened. But what Adam is talking about is that the first deal that went down was one that we had heard rumored, but we weren't sure it was going to – which the Denver Nuggets have shopped a lot of guys now that they're pretty much out of the race, being well under 500, no shot at going to the playoffs in the Western Conference. So they basically started shopping all their players, the GM did, and nobody knew which one it was going to be. The first ones that we heard were really on the docket were Aaron Aflalo, a guard that they had just gotten from the Orlando Magic, actually. And the other one is Wilson Chandler, a small forward. Chandler was talked about quite a bit, but he actually wound up staying in Denver. The guy that got moved was Aaron Aflalo. And Aflalo went to the Portland Trail Blazers in a deal in which he and Alonzo G went to Portland in exchange for Thomas Robinson, Victor Claver, Will Barton, who's a nice player, and a protected 2016 first-round draft pick. So let's just kind of get that out the way. What did you think of that one?
I thought Portland really gave up absolutely nothing because Thomas Robinson, you know, he's already been cut by Denver, and I don't know how he fell apart because he was supposed to be a solid draft pick 2 years ago, right?
Well, he seemed like a steal when the Kings gave up on him early in his rookie year and they traded him to the Rockets. And then the Rockets didn't really have any room for him after they signed Dwight Howard, so they shipped him off to Portland in the summer of 2013. He seemed to be coming around a little bit his second year in the league in Portland, but he wasn't a mainstay. He was a guy on the bench, a bench that's been kind of maligned over the last two seasons in Portland. They just have not – they haven't produced. The guy that's really played well for me is Barton. He's the guy that came in the playoffs when – obviously it was junk minutes because the Spurs blew out the Blazers in most of their games. But Barton, I felt, played well when they asked him to come in. And I think – and he's also – he also has, I think, one more year left on his contract. So that kind of played into it too. That may have been the bargaining chip that the Nuggets were looking at along with Robinson – for this Aflalo deal. I'm not sure what kind of value they're going to get out of that first round draft pick because the Blazers aren't going to be bad anytime soon, if you ask me. My problem with Aflalo is that he's another guard, you know, and they had guards before. You know, they brought in Mo Williams last season. He worked out okay. Damian Lillard is fine. Wesley Matthews is fine. It just feels like they didn't really answer their real need, which was that they needed more size to help out Lopez and LaMarcus Aldridge, who have had injury problems.
Well, you could slide him to the three, but here's a question for you. A lot of people, including myself, said they really blew it by not getting Jeff Green, and this was sort of the makeup deal for him. Who would you rather have, Aflalo or Green?
Jeff Green, because he's more tenacious, and he's more of a day-to-day guy. Aaron Aflalo can no-show sometimes.
Aaron, like, he's just essentially they traded a future first-round pick for a six-man. Because they have Batum and Matthews, and neither of those are, you know, sitting down anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really move Batum to the four and
well,
play small.
Well, that's another guy that's had injury trouble, Nicholas Batum.
Like, don't forget Darrell Wright, who, you know, from our none and dunner list. It's just it seemed like a panic move for them because everybody else was stocking up and we need to get another body in case somebody goes down, but is he an upgrade from what they have? Definitely, but I wasn't as much a fan for this trade as other people were, really.
Yeah,
and a lot of people liked it for some reason. Like, oh, this is great. This is Portland's now gonna start. You know, this will be put them over the top, and they're a contender now. I just don't see it.
Well, they think a lot of the talking heads believe that Aflalo is the offensive kick that they needed off the bench to get him over the top, and with Aldridge not sitting out with the broken, I believe it's a broken thumb, and still. He's still playing great. I mean, he played the All-Star game with a broken thumb, for Christ's sakes. And he's playing great. Lillard's playing great. Batum and Robin Lopez have had some injury trouble too, but they've been really stable in the starting roster, but their bench was a problem. They think that Aflalo will be happy off the bench on a good team and contribute right away and be kind of a spark plug the way that Jeff Green has been in Memphis. And I don't know if those two correlate exactly. I don't think that Aflalo will provide what Green, surprisingly, has been able to provide in Memphis, you know. So it's a risk because I don't think Aflalo is going to be there for the long haul. And his percentage is down. His shooting percentage, I think, is much lower than it was last season when a lot of people were high on him again. So is Aflalo going to produce for Portland, of course, because he's a born scorer, but I don't know how much he's going to provide. Like, is he going to get him in the Western Conference Finals? No, I don't see that. I don't think he's the guy that's going to make that happen. Another deal, this is a laugher, involving the Nuggets. We talked about guys that weren't traded. Ty Lawson stuck around. Wilson Chandler stuck around. One guy that did get traded was JaVale McGee, Shaquille O'Neal's best friend. I don't even know these people, so I'm just going to get out there. He was traded along with a protected 2015 first-round pick and the draft rights to a player named Sawudaber Maduabam to the Philadelphia 76ers for the draft rights to a guard named Sank Akyol, who will never play in the NBA.
It's sort of crazy where you can have a team just say, we'll take on $10 million in salary, no problem. I don't know how many picks the 76ers have, but they don't have that many roster spots for as many picks as they have.
That's the same situation the Boston Celtics are in, another team that's compiled a lot of draft picks over the last few months. There's a point. I think you make a good point there. Salary-wise, can you make it work? Yes. But does it work in terms of headcount on your roster? No. There's no way you can use all maybe like 12 or 13 draft picks that you've compiled over the last 3 years and possibly be able to put all of these players on your roster and be able, and not only that, be able to manage it in a way in which you know which players will work and which ones fit best.
The funny thing is your three, let's say, star players, your three faces of the franchise are all centers.
Mm-hmm.
They have no other players.
Are you calling JaVale McGee the face of the franchise?
Who else do they have? People actually, I think outside of Noel and Embiid, you can't name like two players on that team anymore.
Robert Covington.
Well, that's one.
Jakar Sampson from St. John's.
That took a little long. You had to take a little pause there. The fact people know JaVale McGee and his Instagram account is sort of sad, and I don't know. Philly is just, they're just willing to dump anybody. And at some point, how many picks is enough to use it all? And these guys, you're going to hope that they all pan out. That's not the case.
Is it sort of fitting that McGee got lumped in with two completely like nameless foreigners in a deal in which he probably might be his last stop in his last significant stop in the NBA.
Well, Maduabam, he was part of that.
He was in the D-League. For a little while.
Yeah, he was a D-League, but that was the draft where NBA teams just said, we don't give a shit anymore. We're just going to draft.
That was late in the second round of the 2011 draft.
Targi, Ngumbo, Adam Hanga from Hungary. It was just like five people like you never heard of.
Atar Majuk, who was in the UConn scandal.
Yeah, you know? UConn and was in the Australian League.
Mm-hmm.
It was just players like they're not even on like international scouting depth chart, like radar. So it's just like
I couldn't believe he even had his draft rights still. When I heard the name, I was like, oh, no. Like, you can't tell me he's still on contract on that team. It's like, it's almost like you're just kind of looking into your books, like, okay, how can we make this work? There we go. Maduabam. Send him over. You know?
It's just like, yeah, we'll just, I'm pretty sure Sank Aykol got traded twice or three times here. There was some Turkish guy who was traded in two early trades this year. And it's just, you know, like, why even. Are you just sort of, is it like this agent? Like, look, we'll draft your guy. We'll make him feel good. Is it you're giving a shout out to the international scout guy who has a really shitty job?
I Shilla don't know who Maduabam is.
Like, what's the point? You have players who are playing in the league who weren't drafted because some executive said, oh, let's get this guy. Why?
It's just a reason for the Sixers to make the capologists think that they're trying to win by taking on a big contract in the interim. Because they've done so much to like create this reputation that they're tanking and that they don't have any thought of actually paying big time players to big time contracts. So they said, okay, well, we'll take on a $10 million salary here that we know will only hurt us for maybe one or two seasons because we're not going to be competitive anyway.
Well, two things. I think they sort of realized, like, oh my God, the Lakers and the Knicks are really, really bad. We need to trade away. You know, we need to just get some cancer for nothing. And we're so far under the cap. We need to get nobody. And the second thing, about our boy Chukwudiyerbe, Medubum. You know, we just mentioned those four people. You know who was drafted fifth of that group of the last five?
Who's that?
Isaiah Thomas.
Isaiah Thomas. He was the last pick. He was the last pick of the 2011 draft.
Four teams got those garbage players who will never play in the league, and you got somebody who's producing.
We'll talk about him a little later because he's part of a bigger picture. I want to stay with the Sixers because you talk about how JaVale McGee is going to be the face of the franchise.
Who else is Jakar Sampson?
Well, the reason why we're talking about this is, well, they had the rookie of the year, Michael Carter-Williams, right? Well, not anymore because they traded him to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Bucks, yes. Who, they're like, what?
That was a bit of an interesting one. I think this was part of a convoluted deal with No. This is the trade. It's actually a pretty straight one. The Bucks traded Brandon Knight and the injured Kendall Marshall and the Los Angeles, this is a big one, the Los Angeles Lakers protected 2015 first round draft pick, top five protected, to the Phoenix Suns for Tyler Ennis and Miles Plumlee. They also got Michael Carter-Williams from the Sixers in that deal, and the Sixers got the Lakers draft pick. So basically, the Philadelphia 76ers traded their rookie of the year last season for a draft pick.
Why not? Because...
You're not high on Michael Carter-Williams, though. So do you think this is actually kind of equal value?
No, I'm not high on him, and I'm confused as to why Milwaukee... Milwaukee, I think, was just sort of hurt that Brandon Knight... didn't want to re-sign with them for a long-term deal and just said, okay, fine, you're gone. Even though he has sort of made a resurrection. And the only thing I can say about Carter Williams, who's just his, you know, granted he was injured this year, but he has not been good at all, and his numbers reflect
his shooting is very poor. He's great at finishing at the – well, he's okay at finishing at the rim, and he's a decent defender, but he's a bad – he's not a great passer. He can't shoot, like we just said, and he really hasn't been in a winning situation yet in Philadelphia, so we don't know how he's going to respond in Milwaukee, because the thing is, with Brandon Knight gone, a guy who I'm not in love with that much, now Michael Carter-Williams is sort of in a position where Jason Kidd is going to have to put his hands on him and say, okay, you're going to have to be the guy now. We're going to see now Jason Kidd is the point guard whisperer, which it kind of felt that way over the last two seasons. He kind of rechristened Sean Livingston, in Brooklyn, and then he did the same thing with Brandon Knight. Now let's see what he can do with MCW. Do you think he can do something with him?
That's sort of the hope, is, you know, you have somebody who's just taking bad shots even though he shouldn't. Here's an all-star Hall of Fame player. Maybe you should listen to him. Brandon Knight did, and all of a sudden he looks like a player. You know, like I said, Sean Livingston is there. Even Deron Williams did something for his half a season before his ankles gave out.
Yeah.
That's the hope, I guess.
You know, the one thing I like about it, and we said this in the team previews, is that if the Bucks want to do something different, they can actually just play a bunch of long-armed wingspan guys and basically run with a bunch of, like, forwards and such, or guys that have, like, forward-ish size. Now, they don't run. They're one of the slowest teams in the league, but they do throw out there a lot of wingspan and a lot of guys that can trap you with their athleticism, obviously Giannis Antetokounmpo. This is also sort of an alert by the Bucks that Antetokounmpo is their guy. You think so?
Oh, yeah. They
like,
absolutely.
He's the star. He's the man.
He is the man, and Jabari Parker, when he comes back, will be the man.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to build around those two guys. The funny thing about Giannis is, like, you watch him, his numbers, like, he's good, but he's just not producing yet. Mm-hmm. Like, you watch him, you see the effort, but do you sort of wonder what type of player will he become when he figures it out? Because you can only rely on this talent and raw potential for so long.
Yeah, I think that he's got to start to hone it in a little bit. By year three. Year three is usually the year for even guys with raw potential. Like, okay, got to pick it up. Now it's time to start getting serious. And, you know, for Greek Freak, that's the case. Let's re-explore Knight and Michael Carter Williams, which is basically a swap. Can Michael Carter Williams provide what Brandon Knight was able to provide as by overachieving in Milwaukee? Like, can you insert him and get the same results?
If he just passes the ball and sets from a, okay, I'll put it, there's two ways. From a salary cap standpoint, you can't make a better move than that, trading somebody who's going to probably get...
He's a restricted free agent, yeah.
Brandon Knight, well, we assume, let's just say 4 years, 44 mil.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Maybe
that's 12. About average, yeah. For somebody who's making $4 million on his rookie deal, maybe three?
He's in the second year of a rookie contract, so you got him for at least 2 more years.
Yeah, 2 more years at $3 million a year as opposed to 2 more years at $20 million. Mm-hmm. From that standpoint, well, you that's great. You're now...
It shored up some money also to buy out Larry Sanders, which they did immediately after the deal was done.
Yeah, which we'll talk about that later. But if he learns... You know, Carter Williams, he needs to basically learn to undo all his bad habits. He doesn't need to be, you know, he's not going to be told, go out, shoot 30 shots a game.
Yeah, go get yourself a triple-double, you know.
Yeah, we don't care. You're playing with guys who were just here for the week. Mm-hmm. It's like some NBA summer camp. Now he's going to have to become a structured point guard. If he listens to Jason Kidd, I think he can now turn it around, and all you need to do is just – with that team, that overachieving team, he should be able to fit in, I think. If he just takes a step back and doesn't say, I'm going to be a hero.
The Bucks didn't just get MCW, though. They got Miles Plumlee, who played okay for the Phoenix Suns. We talked about him before. And Tyler Ennis, who was a draft pick last year. He really wasn't. He wasn't doing anything because he's a rookie and because there were so many guards on the team at the time in Phoenix. I don't know what Ennis can provide in Milwaukee, but we're going to see.
Future EuroLeague star Tyler Ennis.
He does have Canadian citizenship, so he can go away.
And, you know, Kendall Marshall goes to Phoenix, who Phoenix got rid of because they drafted him a couple years ago to be Steve Nash's heir apparent.
And yeah, that's exactly.
He got shipped out quickly, and now he's mysteriously back there. So,
he's hurt, so I don't even know if he's going to play this season. Let me see where we're going to go from here. With the Phoenix Suns, because we already just talked about who they unloaded. This was one part of it. With getting Brandon Knight. The reason why they were getting Brandon – now you're thinking to yourself, well, why are they taking on Brandon Knight? They already have three guards. Well, they don't have three guards anymore because two of them got shipped. The first one, and we just mentioned him, was Isaiah Thomas, the little spark plug off the bench. He got traded to the Boston Celtics in exchange for Marcus Thornton and a 2016 first-round pick, one of the $20 million that Danny Ainge compiled between trading Jeff Green and Rajon Rondo. I'm going to tell you right now, because Adam's a Celtics fan, I like this for the Celtics. Like, I think this actually works. And it's a low contract if he produces. Like, his contract is actually not that it's not that detrimental to the cap.
It's a $7 million a year deal. It's him and Avery Bradley, who I guess were childhood or high school friends. Mm-hmm. They're both from Washington. So basically you're saying Cleveland, in order to facilitate a deal, gave the Celtics Tyler Zeller and this first round pick. And then they traded that first round pick and Marcus Thornton.
Who was a bargaining chip from Brooklyn in a Jared Jack deal, right?
Yeah, who's for somebody who can score 15 points a night and provide scoring for a team that doesn't know how to score right now. I it's funny, like, you read, like, people like, oh, this is a horrible trade for the Celtics. They're the new Milwaukee now, going to be mediocre. Like, they're not going to be as bad as the Knicks and the 76ers. I don't think
are mediocre, but that's the point. Like, still gets you in the playoffs.
Well, they're overachieving. Mm-hmm. This, if you look at that roster, it's like, how do they win any games with that, with you know, Sullinger and Olynyk as your two guys once you trade a Rondo? There's, you know, the fact that they're overachieving is something, but, oh, well, no, they should tank and continue to tank for years to come. It's like, well, at some point you have to trade your picks in for something.
we're going to get back on the Suns because this is part of that deal, but I want to stay on the Celtics part. It's interesting because Jeff Green got dumped. Rajon Rondo got dumped. They got a lot in return, especially draft picks, but in terms of like immediate help, let's be serious. They really got nothing. They kind of like shitted it away. But it's weird because if you look at the standings, Boston is right now is 20-32. They're a game and a half out of the eighth spot. Now, are they going to do any damage if they get in the playoffs? Absolutely not. But does it feel like Danny Ainge kind of like took both of his feet out of the house, but the door is still open, and he's kind of like, okay, I guess I could creep my way back in if I want to and try to maybe pick up a good player on the way?
Well, he is saying, did he overpay for Isaiah Thomas? No, not in the least.
Of course not, no.
Thornton was an expiring contract. The first-round pick is Cleveland's, which we know will
be... Was he producing in Boston?
Marcus Thornton produces anywhere, and by producing, I mean he will score 10 or 12 points on 10 or 12 shots.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. He will just jack up threes. If he's hot, he'll have 20 points. If he's not, he will go 2 for 10.
Yeah, he's an LSU product, so I always try to follow him, but I hadn't followed him.
Yeah, he's just a shooter. You know, he's an undersized two who just jacks up threes. That's
quick
what
release.
His job is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you traded nothing, and you got a player who might be a cancer, allegedly. We don't, you know.
Yeah, that's the word out because of the fact that the Kings let him walk, and now that the Suns have kind of let him go all of a sudden.
Well, that's the thing, and not to be, you know, not to defend him because I have to now because he's a Celtic, but the Kings don't really have the most structured, mature team frame there. Oh, Boogie doesn't like him? Oh, well, that's the authority on behavior. Phoenix just sort of hit this bizarro, well, we overachieved and we doubled down on the wrong thing and, you know, we need to blame somebody for not being where they are, but they traded nothing. And you get a solid six man.
But did the Celtics get better? Were they better after Thursday than they were on Wednesday?
Yes and no. They got better because Isaiah Thomas is an upgrade over Marcus Thornton. But now, since Sullinger is out for the end of the year, they're basically into tank mode. But you have a player for next year. Get him in. Let's learn him the system.
Yeah.
Take a flyer on him. His contract is cheap enough where you could get rid of him.
Yeah,
I see.
But it's a kind of sort of tank. It's not like a Philadelphia 76ers all-in tank job, you know?
No, it's a let's get a solid backup player.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get somebody. We don't need him to be a star. This way we're doing something, but we're still holding out for that home run hit. We're still hoping to trade, you know, our three number ones for Kevin Love again and make that big Garnett deal. They're still holding out for that, but there's no reason you can't shore up other positions.
The other reason I like it is because Marcus Smart, who they're sort of trying to mold into their next point guard, their next starting point guard, is that he's not much of a scorer right now. But Thomas can give you that. So maybe him and Bradley and Smart all together might work, even though you don't have any size in your starting backcourt, and then Bradley
the
to play the three.
You have zero size now, and you can't play all three together.
Mm-hmm.
You have just gone super small. Okay, Isaiah Thomas, great shooter, doesn't play D. Marcus Smart, can't shoot, plays D. So I could see they could cover for his sort of, you know, lackadaisical defense, but you paid nothing for him. It's not like you traded him for a future pick like the 76ers.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, pretended you could get somebody good like the Knicks and the Lakers. But I don't see they got another guard. The team has too many guards. We'll wait to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't draft a couple centers, then it was a wasted pick. But you traded nothing.
We mentioned the Sixers, who are obviously in a major tank mode in that Atlantic division that the Celtics are in. The other team that was sort of like the whipping boy of the Thursday trade deadline was Phoenix. Now, we spent the previous episode actually talking about the Phoenix Suns because we never really do, because they were in the eighth spot in the Western Conference playoff standings at the time, but they really, as we spoke about in that episode, if you want to listen back to it, go ahead, is that Suns team doesn't have star power. They didn't have like that one home run hitter that can get you over the top like almost every other team in that Western Conference playoff picture did. Now they make these two moves. Now we talked about the first one, Isaiah Thomas. The other big one was Goran Dragic. The thing that this all went wrong so fast with Phoenix, and I don't know where it began, because Dragic's trade rumors showed up about a week ago, or maybe a week before the trade deadline happened. So the talk was out there about Dragic, and his production was down, but it wasn't really because of him. It was because of the way that the team is patterned, and with Isaiah Thomas taking up so many shots. Well, I don't know. Do you think this is more of a instance of like bruised egos where guys get wind from their agents that they're trying to trade you, and then they just say, okay, the team doesn't trust me, I don't want to be here anymore, get me out of here, and then the organization is forced to move them because they don't want to play there anymore?
I have no clue what any of this was, because, you know, we had mentioned, we talked about it. You were like, oh, Phoenix will make it, they're good. I'm like, no, they're going to do something stupid. And then they just really just hit the implode button. They're like, we're done.
Do you think that they imploded? Like, do you think that they hit the stupid button?
You have two point guards. You have three point guards, actually.
Yeah.
Well, Eric Bledsoe.
You had Bledsoe, you had Dragic, and you had Isaiah Thomas. We called them the 1-2-3 punch because they wore numbers 1, 2, and 3. And Bledsoe got his big money in the summer. Dragic has a player option, and he's on not a small deal. I think it's around $11 million, maybe somewhere around there. But a lot of people think that Dragic can opt out and get more in the free agency next season. So he was also, and this is a part of the trade deadline that everybody's got to remember, almost all these players are in contract years. And so none of these teams want to be stuck in a situation which they retain a player that they could have traded at the deadline, kept them, and then they walk away for nothing. Do you think that was a part of this too?
Well, that's a lot of it. Is we don't want to get nothing for it. We need to get something, anything for these. But you know, again, you have three players, one too many, so you trade two of them away, and then try to have the PR of, oh no, we like Brandon Knight better than anyone we had. Like what?
No, you know, like, there's no way they would have said that in June.
You don't panic as much as they did, and the fact that they panicked was. Did they get a lot? Oh, they got, I believe the pick they got was a 2021 first round pick.
Yeah, they got a first round pick for much later. They got two first round picks from the Miami Heat. That's where, because we didn't talk about it, Goran Dragic and his brother Zoran. They went to Miami together because obviously it was a package deal there. Goran wasn't going to go without his brother. That's who the Heat got, the Miami Heat did. We'll talk about the Heat later. The Suns got Danny Granger's rotting corpse. They got Sean Williams, the one with the E, who we talked about, I believe, in the One and Dunner episode. Justin Hamilton, a white stiff. And I don't know, did John Salmons go to the Heat or did he go to the Suns?
I think he went to the Suns.
He wound up with the Suns in that deal somehow, some way. He was originally a Pelican. He got traded to the Heat, then got traded from the Heat to the Suns in a three-way. And the two first-round draft picks that we were talking about, one of them much, much later. So did they get first-round picks? Yes. And those might be valuable ones because I don't know how good the Miami Heat really were going to be, even if Chris Bosh was healthy. We'll talk about that also later. But – If Bosh was healthy, what kind of a team do you think Miami would have had?
They would have had a solid. They would have been an exciting team to watch, with Dragic now sort of being free as opposed to sort of having to defer to everyone else. But having watched the Suns this year, you think that Dragic is down because of the system?
Yes.
Or did he sort of have a one-year flash?
I think Thomas is – because he played well in Houston before he went to Phoenix. I think Thomas's inclusion and the fact that he falls in love with his shot so much it hurt. I think that's what hurt Dragic a lot. And also, Bledsoe is taking on more and more of the offensive responsibilities also as he, you know, when you get paid more, you feel like I got to do more. And I feel like with Bledsoe, that's what happened. And I don't want to say that there was like there was a dissension in the ranks, because it seemed like they played well together, all three of them. So that's the only thing that kind of shocks me about the whole thing. It's like you don't really know. And that's what I was trying to hint at in the beginning, is that you don't really know how these players truly feel until you kind of turn your back on them. And then, the, you know, with Dragic, he got wind that he might get moved. And oh, my God, that turned so fast. I mean, when you have one of those interviews like that, when you say, I don't trust the team, I mean, that is a scarlet letter. That is like the kiss of death. There's no way you can go back to that team once you say that.
Yeah, that's sort of not very smart to be on that public.
But do you feel like he was betrayed?
I don't know. What was he promised? How can you feel betrayed of, oh, you're in contract talks? That happens to every player in every – nobody's untouchable. There's only like, you know, what, five untouchable players in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody said, I'll give you, you know, an overwhelming deal for them. Oh, okay. Well, he's no longer untouchable. I'm going to trade him away for somebody who's better. Everyone, it's an immaturity thing, which we'll get to another player who did that later. But I don't know. The team just sort of hit this bizarre funk and just I'm not going to say they're bad this year. The Phoenix, but are they really, what did we expect from them? Did we expect them to be a top five or six team in that, in the West this year?
But they were still in the hunt. That's the thing. The thing that really confuses me about it is that they were still holding on as the eighth seed before the deals were done. And now you have clearly made yourself worse. I'm not trying to slight Brandon Knight. Brandon, and I'm being serious here, Brandon Knight's had a really good year. He's overachieved in Milwaukee. He might even be a better fit as sort of a offensive two-guard alongside Bledsoe instead of Bledsoe, Dragic, and Isaiah Thomas trying to juggle the offensive responsibilities and running into each other all the time. So maybe that works a little better. It streamlines the starting lineup a little bit better, so you can play Bledsoe and Knight and never have to worry about who's coming off the bench. But the team is definitely worse, and they've lost four games in a row, two games since the deal happened, and they are now clearly out. They're already a game and a half behind Oklahoma City, who's surging, you know, especially after Russell Westbrook won the All-Star Game MVP. We'll talk about him. we'll talk about him as we get to the end of this episode. But it does feel a little bit like Phoenix gave up.
It does. They just hit the implode button.
I don't want to call it an implosion because they're still good. But in the Western Conference, good is not – it's like the same problem the Pelicans have. Good is not good enough. You've got to be really good.
Well, you trade Plumlee, who was, you know, your starting center while Len was injured. You get rid of your two of your three best players, mm-hmm. arguably, and you get – what do they get in return that's really worth noting? Who did they get that really will help them? Marcus Thornton, they're not going to re-sign him.
Knight's the only guy that can really help him immediately.
Marshall is back on the bench. Knight is their only Knight by default. Is their, you know.
Salmons is just a hanging contract. Granger, I saw him in Miami. He's done. And you got a point there. They're also a team. You know, Ryan McDonough's the GM who's picked up a bunch of draft picks. Now we talked about how Ryan McDonough came from the Celtics, the Hornets, Hornacek came from the Utah Jazz, and then they did something totally different and made it work in Phoenix. Do you think they're going to have to change the way they play now that they don't have Dragic and they don't have Isaiah Thomas?
I don't know, because you just signed Isaiah Thomas, and then I would say normally it's one of those – this is my team. I'm putting a stamp on it. You don't tell me how to run it. You don't do trade demands type deal. But this was your marquee signing, was bringing in Isaiah, and then you get rid of him so quickly.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
One quick thing. Don't forget, they sort of went in by getting Brandon Wright and his expiring contract.
Well, I think that's what made Miles Plumlee a bit of a bargaining chip for them, is that Alex Len has emerged a little bit this season, and because Brandon Wright, the guy that they picked up earlier this season before the trade deadline even happened, the point I was trying to make is that, do you think that Isaiah Thomas being signed was almost kind of a weird situation where they just kind of dangled him out there even though they signed him to a contract? Like, what I'm saying is, like, do you think they signed him knowing they weren't going to keep him?
No, because why would you do that? What if you don't sign somebody, and let's just say they completely bottom out. And this is a bad example, but let's just say Kenneth Faried. He hasn't really been doing much right now, and his contract looks kind of bad. I blame it on the team's dysfunction right now, and they've completely quit on Shaw, but... You know, you don't sign a player going, oh, we could turn him around for something.
Mm-hmm.
That's just bad GM 101 of, oh, yeah, we'll sign him to an above, because, you know, that's not a bargain deal for at the time. It was a bargain deal, but they still paid more than what Sacramento did was going to pay or what other teams were in the bidding mix. It was just a strange fit to begin with, like,
what I mean about that. Like, it was a bad fit anyway. Why did they even bring him in?
Because somebody fell in love with him and said, we need more scoring and this is how we do it. They had to have a reason other than we need a body. Let's get the smallest one in the league. I don't know.
I think these two deals did in Phoenix. I don't think they'll be able to get in the playoff race. Will they be able to do it in the future with Knight, Bledsoe, and then whoever they pick up with all these future draft picks? Possibly, but that's way down the road. That's in 2 years. In the immediate future with the teams that are now – this is the top eight teams right now in the Western Conference, Golden State, Memphis, Houston, Portland, the LA Clippers, the Dallas Mavericks, the Spurs, Oklahoma City – they're not getting any worse for at least another year. Next year, they're all going to be back together. Anthony Davis is not getting any worse in New Orleans. This is the end for Phoenix, I think, as a playoff contender. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. But do I have a reason for you at this second?
Contrarian.
You could say it, but unfortunately, which we'll talk about later, everybody's going to have mad cap room and people would rather live in warm weather than low weather. That's why free agents still go to Phoenix after all these years, is because of the nice weather. It seems, cause, they don't have a competitive team. Do they?
It's a cute little team. Like, it's like a team where, you know, you could watch them and say, "Hey, they're a nice scrappy bunch, and they play up and down ball, and they try hard, but they don't have any stars." Like we were saying,
they have no stars. But let's look at it this way: who do they trade for? They traded for Marcus Thornton, expiring contract. Brandon Wright, expiring contract. Gerald Green is on an expiring contract. John Salmons, expiring contract. So they'll have money to sign somebody next year. Was it worth it for a potential eighth pick? Maybe they sort of realized this is high as we could get a borderline eight team. I don't know. It's just a mystery, and that's why I call it implosion button, because why would you get rid of both?
Yeah, I could kind of see it that way with Phoenix, where they kind of felt like, okay, how competitive are we really going to be if we get into the playoffs? I don't think any GM thinks that way. Like, well, we're not going to be competitive, so let's be less competitive. You know, there's only two or three GMs that are thinking that way right now. One of them is Sam Hinkie. The other one, unbelievably, is the winningest coach in professional sports history, in Phil Jackson with the New York Knicks. I got to tell you, amazingly, Adam, actually, we're going a little over. So you want to go ahead and just continue this talk, maybe put this together?
We did all the trades. We got every. No, we got one more.
We're not even.
To talk about.
No, we still got quite a few to go here. And we got a lot. We got some catch up to do with the NBA goings on now that they've restarted after the All-Star break. Adam's got a few suggestions also. So we're actually going to go ahead and continue this. Keep tuning in. This is the end of part one, and be sure to listen to part two of the NBA Team Podcast. We'll be back with more.